From the book of Discovery of Truth and Immortality by Swami Ramsukadas, Chapter 1, Discovery of Truth. In the scriptures it is mentioned that in the human body there is predominance of action. When a man has a desire to acquire something, he is inclined to act. An action is of two kinds, kartavya, duty, that is what ought to be done, and akartavya, what ought not to be done. Performance of action with disinterested spirit is kartavya, and its performance with interested spirit is akartavya. The root of akartavya is the desire for sensual pleasures. When the desire for pleasure is wiped out, akartavya is not done. When akartavya is not done, kartavya, that is duty, is automatically performed. The spiritual discipline which is practiced naturally or automatically is real, and which is practiced intentionally and with effort is unreal, artificial. It is not a rule that a desire is always satisfied. A desire may be or may not be satisfied. Till today, all the desires of even a single person have not been satisfied, nor can be satisfied. If a desire is born but it is not satisfied, it causes much pain. But the condition of man is that he feels sad when his desire is unsatisfied, and again he has a new desire. The result is that neither his desires are satisfied nor his pain ends. Therefore, if a person wants to escape pain, the remedy is the renunciation of desire. Here a doubt may arise why we should perform an action when we have no desire. The clarification is that an action is performed in order to reap its fruit and also to renounce the desire for its fruit. He who wants to be free from the bondage of actions performs an action in order to renounce the desire for fruit. Another doubt may arise. If we have no desire, how will our life run smoothly? Should we not need food and water, etc. for sustenance? The clarification is that we have been taking water and food for so many years. Have our hunger and thirst been satisfied? The answer is no. Our hunger and thirst have not been satisfied. Another question may be raised that we will die without food and water. Okay, will you not die if you go on taking food and water? You will have to die. In fact, our life does not depend on the satisfaction of desires. Did the mother suckle the child at its birth because it had a desire? Life is not sustained by desire but by destiny. All desires are never satisfied of any person. Some desires are satisfied and others are not satisfied. This is everyone's experience. We should reflect upon whether satisfaction or insatisfaction of desires makes any difference in us, the self. Do we not exist if our desire is not satisfied? Having reflected upon this point, we realize that the self ever remains the same, whether a desire is satisfied or not. We, the self, ever remain the same, whether the desire is satisfied or not satisfied or renounced. This fact provides us the vigor. Why should we suffer pain when it does not make any difference in us, the self, if our desire is not satisfied? There are two options for a man. Either he should satisfy all his desires or he should renounce them. It is beyond his control to satisfy desires. Therefore, why not to renounce them? We don't do what we can and we want to do what we can't. It is because of this heedlessness that we are suffering pain. First of all, for the person who wants to renounce desires, it is inevitable to accept the fact, in the world there is nothing mine. So long as we assume the body or any other thing ours, it is difficult to renounce the desire totally. If we accept the fact that in infinite universes there is no such thing which is mine and which is for me, then the desire is naturally wiped out. Because when there is nothing mine and for me, then what acquisition should we desire and what should we desire it? Desires are totally renounced only when man has no relationship, I-ness, mine-ness, with the body. Therefore, total renunciation of desires means to suffer death while living. For example, when a man dies, he does not call anything as his own and wants nothing. He is not affected by favorableness or unfavorableness, honor or dishonor, praise or blame, etc. Similarly, when desires are totally renounced, man is not affected by favorableness and unfavorableness, etc., but remains alive. Therefore, King Janaka, in spite of having the physical body, was called Videha, not bound by the physical body. He who suffers death while living becomes immortal. Therefore, if man becomes totally free from desires, he becomes immortal while living. When all desires resting in the striver's mind are rooted out, then the mortal man becomes immortal and here, in this human life, realizes Brahma, the absolute well. When a striver does not attach significance to the satisfaction of desires, then by him all actions are performed automatically with disinterested spirit and he is freed from the bondage of action. Being free from the desire for pleasure, all his evils are destroyed because the root of all evils is the desire for pleasure. A striver's life should be free from evils. He who is endowed with evils cannot be a striver. Now let us think over, where do evils abide? In the world there are two entities, the real and the unreal. Evils or flaws abide neither in the real, which is imperishable, nor in the unreal, which is perishable. Flaws don't abide in the real because the real never ceases to be, that is, it has no shortage. Gita chapter 2 verse 16. A desire is born only when there is some shortage. But the entity which never ceases to be, that is, remains uniform, has no shortage and therefore there can't be any desire in it, and where there is no desire there can't be any flaw. Also there can't be a flaw or defect in the unreal because the unreal has no existence. Gita chapter 2 verse 16. Therefore, where can a flaw abide in the unreal when it has no existence? The biggest flaw or defect is that the unreal has no existence, so there is no possibility at all of the visit of any defect in it. In the relationship between the real and the unreal also, there can't be any flaw because, as the relationship of the light with the dark is impossible, similarly the relationship between the real and the unreal is impossible. Then where do flaws abide? Flaws abide in the person who has a desire. The reason is that all flaws are born of desire. Gita chapter 3 verse 37. When a man has a desire for pleasure by acquiring a thing, then greed is born. When he has a desire for pleasure through a person, then delusion is born. When he desires pleasure by a particular state, then limitedness or segregation is born. As in a seed, the jungle spreading for miles and miles is existent. Similarly, in a flaw, all flaws are existent. There is no flaw which does not involve all other flaws. Therefore, so long as there is any flaw, a striver should not feel satisfied. Every person is partially evil and partially virtuous. No one can be endowed with flaws in all ways, at all times, and for all persons, etc. because at the root he is a fragment of God. If a striver wants to be totally flawless, he should totally renounce the desire for contact-born pleasures. Now let us think over, where does a desire abide? Several people hold that a desire abides in the mind. But actually a desire does not abide in the mind, but comes into or visits the mind. Gita chapter 2 verse 55. The mind is an instrument, an internal instrument. An instrument has no desire. Has a pen a desire to write? Has a motor car a desire to move? No. If we hold that a desire abides in the mind, then if the desire is not satisfied, the mind should suffer pain. But if the desire is not satisfied, the doer or the self suffers pain. Therefore, in fact, desire does not abide in instruments, but abides in the doer. An instrument depends on the doer. But being entangled in the duality in the form of pleasure and pain caused by the satisfaction and insatisfaction of desires, a man's discriminating faculty does not function properly, and so he holds the desire to be abiding in the mind. Now reflect upon who is a doer. If the mind had been a doer, an agent, it would have not thought according to the determination of the intellect. It is everyone's experience that the mind renounces the desire to do a piece of work which the intellect determines not to do, and it desires to perform an action which the intellect determines to do. But the intellect is also not an independent agent, because intellect is also an instrument, an internal instrument. When a man derives pleasure out of the satisfaction of a desire, then his intellect decides to do that action. But the man who knows that the enjoyment of pleasures results in pain renounces the pleasure derived out of the satisfaction of desire, then his intellect, instead of being inclined towards pleasures, decides to renounce the desire for pleasure. An instrument depends upon the agent and is very beneficial in the performance, accomplishment of an action. The self, soul, is also not an agent, because if there had been doership in the self, the doership would have never been destroyed. Therefore, the Lord has negated the sense of doership in the self. Gita chapter 13 verse 31. The self, though dwelling in the body, neither acts nor is tainted. In fact, he who is an experiencer, happy and sad, is an agent. Now think over who is an experiencer. Neither the real nor the unreal can be an experiencer, because the real is devoid of experiencership, while in the unreal, no experiencership is possible. When a striver discriminately renounces his affinity with the body totally, which indeed is, then there persists neither a doer nor an enjoyer, but only the divine entity remains. It proves that no one is a doer or an enjoyer, but doership or enjoyership is merely assumed. Here a point needs attention, that when the self is realized, that is, there is knowledge or self-realization, then a striver has no relationship with the so-called body, sharira, and then he has also no relationship with the shariri. The reason is that the divine entity, the self, because of its affinity with the sharira, body, is called shariri. When its affinity with the body is renounced, the divine entity persists, but it is not called shariri. In the divine entity, all shariris become one. That divine entity is called Brahma, or the absolute. And to remain axiomatically established in that natural state is salvation. Having attained salvation, the soul, self, becomes identical in attributes with Brahma. That is, as Brahma is truth, knowledge, bliss solidified, so does the self become truth, knowledge bliss solidified. Gita chapter 14 verse 2. Those having taken refuge in this wisdom become identical in attributes with me. Having become identical in attributes with God, the man, embodied soul, becomes free from the cycle of birth and death, and he becomes pure, enlightened, emancipated, young, free from old age, immortal and independent. This is called attainment of yoga or union with God. Gita chapter 2 verse 53. Where there is yoga or equanimity or union with God, there is no bhoga or worldly enjoyment. And where there is bhoga, there is no yoga. This is a rule. But there is also a state when a striver becomes proud of yoga or knowledge, wisdom, or devotion, love, and he holds that he is a yogi, or he is wise, or he is a lover. The reason is that from time immemorial, the man has formed the habit of getting proud of himself when he establishes relations with anyone or with anything. As having acquired wealth, he declares, "I am wealthy," etc. "I am a yogi." In fact, this is bhoga of yoga because in it there is attachment to yoga. In this case, with yoga, there is a mixture of egoism. "I am jnani," wise. In fact, this is bhoga of jnana because in it there is also attachment to knowledge. In it with wisdom, there the egoistic notion is also mixed. "I am a premi," lover. In fact, this is bhoga of love because in it there is attachment to love. In it with love, there also the egoistic notion is mixed. When bhoga is wiped out, then the striver does not remain either a yogi or wise or a lover. That is, his individuality is totally wiped out. The reason is that he gets identified with yoga, knowledge, or love. That is, he becomes yoga personified, or knowledge personified, or love personified. Therefore, he loses the sense of pride. So long as his individuality persists, there remains possibility of a downfall. Therefore, he who is proud of yoga can sometimes also get entangled in bhoga, or mundane enjoyments or pleasures. He who is proud of knowledge can also sometimes get entangled in ignorance. He who is proud of liberation can also sometimes get entangled in bondage. He who is proud of love can also sometimes get entangled in attachment. When a striver gets rid of the pride, bhoga of yoga, knowledge and devotion, love, then he attains salvation. Even having attained salvation, a subtle impression of ego persists in the discipline or opinion which a striver followed during his spiritual practice, which is called Abhimana Shunya Aham, that is, ego free from pride. As roasted gram cannot be used as seed for farming but is used as an eatable, similarly, the ego free from pride does not lead to birth and death, but because of the impression of one's opinion, causes differences of opinions with other philosophers. It means that because of that subtle ego, a liberated soul gets satisfied with his opinion or discipline. So long as he is satisfied with his opinion and recognizes and honors it only, there cannot be ideological unity with other philosophers. Spiritual practices are different, but sadhana tattva, spiritual discipline in essence, is one. That is, karma yoga, jnana yoga, discipline of action, discipline of knowledge, etc., all combined constitute sadhana tattva. The opinion of a liberated soul is sadhana tattva. The soul, the self, is a fragment of God. Therefore, whatever opinion or spiritual discipline a striver catches hold of, that is, insists on that appears to be true to him. Therefore, a striver should follow his opinion but should not catch hold of it, that is, should not insist on it. He should insist neither on knowledge nor on devotion. He should not regard his opinion as superior to other opinions, but respect and value other opinions equally. According to the Gospel of the Gita, as the renunciation of the mire of delusion is necessary, so is the renunciation of the confusion of mind by hearing conflicting spiritual doctrines is necessary. Gita chapter 2 verses 52 to 53, because both are the stumbling blocks to the progress of a striver. Therefore, so long as a striver perceives philosophical differences between his doctrine and others' doctrines and does not value them equally, he should not feel contented with his spiritual progress. Having ideological differences, he can have an access to sadhana tattva, but he cannot attain the supreme goal, salvation or God realization. Having attained the supreme goal, he does not insist on any doctrine or opinion, and all opinions appear alike to him. It means that the means to achieve an end are several, but the end is one and the same. The founders of ideological doctrines don't indulge in conflicts, but their followers do. The reason is that the followers have not attained salvation, so they insist on their opinion, while the founders have attained salvation. It is because of the differences in doctrines or opinions of the founders that their followers have attachment to their doctrines and aversion to the sects of others. It is attachment and aversion which cause a very big stumbling block to the discovery of the truth. But being free from attachment and aversion, a striver discovers the truth that when the real entity, God, is one, then why are there differences in opinions? Therefore, he is not content with salvation. In the discovery of truth, he loses his own identity also, and then only Vasudevaha Sarvam, that is, all is God, remains. The striver who has the latent impressions of devotion is not content with salvation. The relish of salvation becomes insipid to him, and then he attains devotion to God. Devotion is a means as well as an end. In the discipline of devotion, because the means, that is the spiritual discipline, and the end, both are God, so the insistence of the striver on his opinion is easily given up, and sadhya bhakti, devotion as an end, that is every moment enhancing devotion, is automatically attained. Having attained devotion, all is only God, this entire form of God is obviously realized and profound love for God is aroused. When such a profound love is aroused, then there remains no insistence on a particular opinion. All differences of opinions come to an end and only one entity remains. In salvation, there is constant bliss, while in devotion there is infinite and enhancing bliss which increases every moment. Devotion, love, is the final fruit, aim, of all spiritual disciplines. Every striver has to attain this goal by practicing his spiritual discipline. Therefore, this human life is indeed meant for spiritual practice or for devotion, love, to God, because the human life has been bestowed upon us so that we may attain God, and only attainment of devotion to God is the life achievement of human life. Man and striver both are synonyms. He who is not a striver is in fact not a man. He who is a striver is indeed a man. A man's main duty is to accept the truth. God exists, this is true, and the world does not exist, This is also true. To accept the true as true is acceptance of the truth, and to accept the untrue as untrue is also acceptance of the truth. To accept our relationship with the Supreme Person with whom we have it is acceptance of the truth, and not to accept our relationship with the inert, that is, a thing or a person with whom we don't have it, is also acceptance of the truth. At the root, there is only one truth, reality, and that is that there is nothing else at all besides God in His entire form. Vasudevah Sarvam, all is God.